From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Southeast Alaska's winter troll king salmon season is underway. Landings are up from last year, but last year was nothing to brag about. One sign of encouragement, though, is the price, which opened at $12 a pound. Also out of Southeast, they're cute, but they are becoming a nuisance, especially since they are a protected species. We have a report on how stakeholders and government officials are all trying to ease conflicts caused by the increasing numbers of sea otters. And we look at a program that collects data by counting the fish brought on board fishing boats. Fishermen in Kodiak question how their observer dollars are being spent and suggest improvements to the program. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Southeast Alaska's winter troll season for king salmon has gotten off to a little better start in 2019. Commercial landings and the number of fish caught are up from last year. However, both still lag behind 5 and 10 year averages for this point in the season. Perhaps the most encouraging sign was the opening price of $12 a pound. Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Grant Hagerman says that's the highest starting point on record.
At this time last year, the price had increased over the first month, and it was just under 12, so it's pretty similar to last year, but starting out at $12 is the highest that we've had on record.
Hagerman suspects the price may be a simple case of supply and demand following a less productive summer season.
With a lower abundant year, I think with just catch ceilings throughout the West Coast down for the summer fishery, you know, there may not have been as much fish, you know, hitting that market in the summertime, and so there might be more of a demand for these winter kings now.
More than 5,700 Chinook have been caught so far. District 13, off the west coast of Baranoff Island, has seen the highest number in Southeast, with close to 2,000 fish. The average weight of 11 pounds 5 ounces is consistent with the 10-year average. Effort is also up this year across Southeast with 188 permits compared to 141 at this time last year. Meanwhile, in Juneau, efforts to ease conflicts over Southeast Alaska's growing sea otter population are underway. Federal and state officials recently met with scientists, fishermen, and tribal groups in Juneau to find solutions. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick has this update.
100 years ago, the fur trade wiped out sea otters in Southeast Alaska. They were reintroduced in the 1960s. And since then, they've done really well. The last official estimate shows that there are more than 25,000 of them. But their success has changed their environment. Research biologist Tim Tinker says they're a keystone species.
That means they have a bigger effect than almost any other animal for their size on their ecosystems. Many of those effects are really disruptive to the existing commercial activities like shell fisheries that have developed.
Their primary food source includes shellfish. Many of them are commercially harvested species like red sea urchin and gooey duck clams. They also eat sea cucumbers. Collectively, these are known as Southeast Alaska's dive fisheries. Last year, divers made about $12.4 million on them. Phil Doherty of the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association said that when you add up all the divers, the deckhands, tenders, and processors on the slime line.
I mean, we're employing, 500-600 people for 4 or 5 months. So from an economic point of view, these dive fisheries are important.
But even if federal and state managers wanted to curb the growing sea otter population, their options are limited. For one, they can't just open a hunt. The otters are covered by the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That means they can only be hunted by coastal Alaska Native people for subsistence or traditional crafts. Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Kyle Hebert says his agency has a hard job managing the region's dive fisheries.
We feel pressure from industry to elevate harvest rates to try to take advantage of those species before they're gone. We also feel pressure And criticism for not reducing our harvests because of sea otters.
After a day-long meeting in Juneau, wildlife and fisheries managers, fishing industry, and tribal representatives formed a committee to recommend ways to manage sea otters. A draft is expected by the end of the year. But that's assuming the federal government isn't shut down later this month. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Patrick Lemons says there's a looming political impasse in Washington, D.C.
If we don't have a government shutdown, we would have a report available and produced on our website sometime early in the calendar year of 2020.
The continuing conflict between fishermen and sea otters is not new, nor is it limited to Alaska. Tim Tinker, who works out of the University of California in Santa Cruz, says it's happening up and down the Pacific coast.
There's no simple solution, but I think with all the stakeholders working together and all, you know, people with different interests and different understandings of these ecosystems, I think there are solutions, but it's going to be, it'll be a long road.
He recently released a paper that says Southeast Alaska's carrying capacity could be 3 times the present population. That'd be around 75,000 sea otters. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org. The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Observer fees are going up for Alaska fishermen and processors. In Kodiak, fishermen aren't too worried about the modest increase, but some would like to see improvements made to the decades-old program. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Kavitha George reports the increase has fishermen questioning how their dollars are being spent.
In Kodiak's Dog Bay Harbor, Jake Everich is puttering around the galley of his trawler, the Alaskan.
All right. I'm actually just making a coffee, and I've got to just check something down below real quick, and I'll be right back.
Everich bought his boat in March to fish for rockfish and pollock around the Gulf of Alaska. It's just under 75 feet, a relatively small operation. Everich is among the fishermen affected by a recent decision from the North Pacific Fishery Management Council to increase observer fees from 1.25 to 1.65% of their catch value. When he sits down at the little galley table with his cup of coffee, he doesn't seem worried the fee hike will put him under.
I mean, I would say for my own business, no, it's not that tight. That 0.4% isn't going to put me into bankruptcy.
He's clear he doesn't speak for all vessel owners when he says that. In an average season, Everich's gross is about $500,000. So the bump to observer fees means an extra $2,000 out of his profit margin. It's not great, but it's not unmanageable, he says. For Everich, the bigger issue is how that money is going to be used. He says the data observers collect, and sometimes observers themselves, can be unreliable.
When the program first started, yes, there was large emphasis on using that data strictly for management, better understanding of the fisheries resource, but I feel that at this point it has devolved into something that we pay for, but it doesn't do anything, really.
Observers are neutral data collectors who go along on fishing trips. They watch to make sure everyone is following regulations, but they also collect biological data and information about bycatch. Trawl boats like Everich's, along with some other gear types, are in what's called the partial coverage sector. That means that they only have to carry observers some of the time. Depending on funding, observers cover about 1 in every 6 fishing trips, but it's random. You might get assigned an observer 3 trips in a row, or not at all. Historically, the federal government has helped to fund the program, but that money is likely going away, says Bill Twight, vice chair on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. And without guaranteed federal money, the council has to look to the fleet for funding. Twight says the council doesn't take increasing operating costs on fishermen lightly.
we think there's some ways of beginning to interject some cost containment. And that's the sort of thing we're going to be working on over the next couple of years.
The big cost-saving measure is electronic monitoring, or EM. EM systems use cameras and GPS systems instead of a person to collect data on board a vessel. They're a lot more expensive up front when you consider installation and equipment, but Twite estimates the daily cost of an EM system is roughly half that of a human observer.
Electronic monitoring, as it transitions from the developmental stage to fairly wide use, we're at the point where it's a well-accepted institutionalized program. We really see costs beginning to drop there as well.
EM systems are still quite new to the industry and only in use on certain types of boats. Average is part of a pilot program to test out the systems on trawl vessels.
So here's the sensor right here. So this is connected to the computer.
And down in the engine room, he's pointing out how the system is rigged to monitor the boat. For Everidge, EM eliminates the downsides of a human observer. The electronics won't get seasick, for instance, and he thinks EM can provide better fishery management data.
I think cameras would do a better job, but I agree with the program. You know, I don't have any issue with that. I just wish that we could return to better management of the fishery.
EM developers still have to work out some kinks before the system is as prevalent as Everidge would like, but he's already looking forward to a fully electronic observer system. In the meantime, the observer fee hike doesn't kick in until 2021. Reporting for Alaska's Energy Desk in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
Let's look at some fish statistics. The Alaska seafood industry impacts 60,000 jobs with $1.5 billion in earnings. There are more than 9,000 fishing vessels and 87 large shoreside plants in Alaska. If that doesn't make you feel proud to be an Alaska fisherman, listen to this. The seafood industry supports local and state tax revenue, scientific research, and marketing assessments. And it provides economic activity in rural Alaska, in many areas where there is no other economic activity. This information comes from the McDowell Group, which compiled these fishing statistics for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Ari Snyder at KCAW in Sitka, Jacob Resnick at Coast Alaska in Juneau, and Kavitha George here at KMXT. On a personal note, I'd like to thank all you listeners for joining us here each week to listen to the Alaska Fisheries Report, and to the reporters all over the state who contribute each week to make this show possible. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.